it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Wednesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great day. Our next guest, he always has great days. Former Titan wide receiver Chris Sanders. Chris, what's up?
What's going on, fellas? Hey, y'all doing all right, man? Y'all hanging in there?
How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm just got done working out, did like 2,000 push-ups, and now I'm about to go out there and try to fight these moles. That's my entertainment of the day.
Oh, you've got moles in the yard?
Fighting moles. Getting after it.
Yeah, they...
Getting after it. I get excited in the morning when, you know, I mean, that's how crazy it's been. I get excited to fight moles. That's my day.
Are you going like Caddyshack in your yard? Are you going to start blowing things up?
Well, those were gophers. Yeah. Those were gophers. Do you use the same tactics against moles as gophers?
Yes. Yeah, I really do. I actually get up like about 6:30 in the morning and just see when they're moving, and then I try to get them. I mean, I'm using spray. I'm using these little fake worms. You see how excited I'm getting? But, I mean, it is incredible. I'm having a blast.
What are they doing to your yard? Why do they have your attention?
They're tearing my yard up. They're, right. like, making big holes.
And, yes.
You know, my grass is looking kind of green, but then you got all these divots and holes, and it's just making me mad, man. I'm getting upset.
I've had moles, too, and they burrowed completely under my fence and into the backyard.
Fence?
Yeah. Because I kept wondering. I was like, why are the dogs so, you know, they're infatuated over there in that corner of the fence, and they're just always sticking. And I've noticed, like, his head, you know, I get a German Shepherd, so I'm like, their heads are disappearing. What are they doing? If they dug
it
a hole?
Crazy.
So I blamed it on them. It wasn't them. It was moles.
Yeah. Man, I'm telling you, it tears up your yard, but I'm kind of glad it's happening now because that's my entertainment. You know, just for me to get out the house, and, you know, it's even exciting, you know, just checking the, you know, the mailbox. I mean, I'm having, that's my entertainment. And then watch Netflix and then run routes in the den. That's all I got. That's all I got.
Routes in the den.
I want to see a video of Chris trying to chase a mole down. I think that would be some great social media content.
I might put it on there. I might have my son and my daughter tape it, but man, hey, you know, that's all you can do. I mean, I work out in the morning and chase moles and then work out with my son a little bit. And, you know, I sit here and watch 30 hours of Netflix.
Well, okay, what are you watching on Netflix?
Man, I'm watching Prison Break.
Prison Break, okay.
And then I'm watching a lot of love stories.
Well, sell us on – hold on. But, yeah, before we get to the love stories, sell us on Prison Break. We're in Ozark mode. By the way, I'm going to be – starting probably season 3 this weekend. So I'm excited about that. So I'm getting, you know, I'm working on it. So I'm going to be done here in the pretty near future. So I'm going to need the next thing. So sell me on Prison Break.
Man, it's really good. It's about a brother who gets falsely accused of committing a murder. And then his brother actually commits a crime so he can go in jail and try to break him out. And it's incredible. My son just got me watching it the last couple of days, and I think I watched like 6 episodes already. I mean, it keeps your attention, it keeps you on edge, and it just has so many storylines that are going on. And him breaking out and him, you know, becoming the big guy in the jail cell, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it's kind of a good family movie. I mean, there's no bad words or anything. They may have one bad word. They may say darn or D-A-M or whatever, but it's a good movie to where, you know, everybody can watch it.
Hmm. There's going to be a point where we all reach the reward and then the sadness when Netflix comes up and says, congratulations, you have watched all of our content. We have nothing else for you. Like, that'll be rewarding and very sad on one hand, because I think we're all getting close to that.
Dude, I'm watching movies I never heard of. I mean, I watched I'm serious. I'm like, okay, we'll watch this movie. I'm thinking it's going to be really, really dumb. But in actuality, it's probably one of the best movies I've seen. I mean, it's a lot of them on there. I mean, it's movies that you've never heard of. I watched a movie, I don't know if you remember this movie, called School Days with Spike Lee.
Uh-huh.
I'm watching that, and that came out like in the 80s. And I'm like, man, this is great. I mean, that's how desperate I am of watching movies.
Wow, I know. I think we're all there, Chris. By the way, I'm going to give you a really good movie if you're into this is like a comedy / love story. This is in your love story category. It's called Crazy Stupid Love. It was 2011. It's a
good one.
Really good movie. Steve Carell.
I'm going to try it, man.
And Ryan Gosling.
I'm going to try it.
It's Crazy Stupid
it's
Love.
A strong cast hey, up and down.
Yep.
I got one for you, too. This is really going to blow your mind. I watch Vampire Diaries. What in Sammy Hill and Mike? It's really good. I mean, there's just so many things going on. Then another one that I just got done finished watching is All-American. I watched that. And then now I'm watching 60 Days In. This is on a different channel. That's how much TV I'm watching.
Wow.
I've heard All-American's really good, too, that it's like it Friday is. Night Lights.
Yeah, but the football scenes are awful. I mean, they're awful. it's like Darren trying to run a route. I'm serious.
Now, you didn't have to go there. You did not have to go there.
Hey, the football scenes, when the guy is running the route, it is the worst route I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, and what in Sammy Hill are we doing? But the other storylines are good.
So bad acting.
That is a potential disqualifier of any show, right? If the sports are so bad, if the actors are so bad on the court or on the field, that could really ruin the movie. That could ruin the movie.
I'm telling you, it's like Darren running a curl route. It is just like that.
You went there again. You don't have to keep emphasizing. We got it. It's bad.
He would do better than I would, Chris. It's okay.
We are having our Nashville sports bracket. Okay.
Okay.
And we've had a lot of fun with this over the last couple of weeks, the best Nashville athletes of the last 30 years. And we are down to we had 64 athletes,
wow.
And we are down to
– Did I make the list? Didn't we go through this last year, man?
Hold on. I'm getting a phone call. Can you hold on one second? Let me check this.
Chris, you were a 3 seed in the NIT.
Yeah, I was going to say we were going to reveal the NIT.
You were a bubble player, and your bubble burst.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for the encouragement. Thanks, Buzz. That's
what you get for talking about my routes. It's down to Steve McNair and Pecorine. We have our championship today, and we want a good Steve McNair story from Chris Sanders.
Yeah. We were playing the Dallas Cowboys, and I think it was like 3rd and 15, and the play before, Steve McNair broke his finger. I mean, it was pointing the other way.
Ooh.
And I remember Frank Wycheck in the huddle, and I think it was Eddie George, was trying to call timeout to get him out of the game because his finger was broke. And he was like, oh, you know how Steve McNair is. I'm like, man, you're right. He's like, yeah, I'm good. And as he's walking up to get the ball from the center, he pops it back in place. And as he pops it back in place, he gets the ball. Next thing you know, he runs a 40-yard touchdown. That's a crazy story that I'll never, ever forget. Mm. Unbelievable.
Wow. Chris
Unbelievable.
Sanders.
That, I'm telling you, he's one of the toughest dudes I've ever met, ever.
I'm cringing just thinking about that. Let me ask you this, Chris.
Sure.
Take me back to the first time you ever met him. Because I'm sure you had watched him and you were aware of Air McNair from Alcorn State. We were all seeing these amazing highlights when he was in college. When he became a teammate of yours, take us back to the first day you met him.
Sure. I met him when we were in an offensive meeting. He walked in, and just knowing Steve McNair, I didn't really know him. I just knew about him, just watching him, what he did at Alcorn State. But I just kind of watched him from afar, you know, a real quiet guy. Sometimes he just kind of keep to himself. But he was just one of those guys that was willing to learn and willing to get better. You know, when he first came in, we had Chris Chandler. He was a quarterback. And funny story about that, they really didn't get along. But even though they didn't get along, Steve McNair was still willing to learn from everybody else. And just watching him was a great teammate. Everybody loved him. And I just loved being around him. And just watching him, the way he responded, you know, just going through adversity and going through different things in his life, you know, I wanted to be like that guy because I watched how he didn't just settle for just being okay. And that's why I love Steve McNair so much. And the funny thing that we're even talking about Steve McNair, I actually was going to post something on my Facebook page. I usually don't, you know, post that many things, but I was just going to tell, you know, him that if he was here today, I would say thank you for being a great teammate, and it was an honor to get drafted with him in 1995. That's funny that we're talking about it.
Yeah, so when you guys came in, you know, you're playing, right, and he had to wait his turn. Because as you mentioned, he had Chris Chandler, and they had him sit and learn there for a while. So during that time, what was he like day to day? Was he okay with it? Was he sitting there maybe privately telling you, hey, I need to get in there. I'm ready to go in there. But he seemed to be okay with the process. But tell us about that time.
Yeah, he never expressed it.
you know, about I need to play, I need to do this. You know, I broke these kind of records. He was kind of a guy that just said, you know, I'm going to wait my turn. And you can just watch by his body language that he did want to play. I'm not going to sit up here and say that, you know, he was okay with it. Because when you come from Alcorn State, you come from a situation to where you're the man, to all of a sudden you got to learn a whole different system. You got to learn your teammates, and you got to learn your coach. You got to learn a lot of things. You know, I know it was hard for him sitting for 2 years knowing that he can play the game. But the one thing that I love that he did is he handled it with class. He never got in the media and said, well, I need to be playing. I got drafted first round. I need to do this. He never said that. He just said, I'm going to wait my turn. And just remembering his documentary when they did on, I think it was not 30 for 30, I think it was on NFL Network, when they interviewed his mom said that he was frustrated and he was upset, but he never complained. It just shows you what type of guy this is. When he's going through adversity, he's going through challenges, he never complained.
I have this memory as well. The first game, I think it was in Memphis. It was the first year that he was named the starter. Chris Sanders, I believe.
Oh, thanks, bud.
Yeah. Yeah. I can tell you exactly where I was. I was with George. We were at the box seat. We were watching. Yeah. We did not make the trip to Memphis. Sorry about that. The old box seat. And you guys were wearing the old Oilers uniforms. You're playing the Raiders, right? You guys won the game. Eddie had a huge game, if I remember
that
correctly.
Yeah.
But
I think he ran for 200 in that game?
Yeah.
He always seemed to have huge games against the Raiders, for sure. But
yeah.
Chris, that moment, I'm thinking that, you know, that he's waited a long time to get the reins, you know, to really be the starter there. So, and he went through a period of time, right, where he was good, but you guys had not really broken through until, obviously, 99, a couple years later. But did you always sense that breakthrough was coming? Did you say, you know, this guy has greatness, it's just a matter of time?
Yeah, I mean, I watched him. I mean, he had a great ability. He was strong, he was smart, and he was intelligent. But I just think that, you know, the one thing he had to do is he had to fight through the adversity. Once you fight through adversity of, you know, saying that you can't play in this league, you can't do this, and, you know, afraid to make mistakes, once he pushed through that barrier, that's when he came into his own. And I just watched him mature, not just as a football player, but just as a man. I mean, when you come in the league and you're raw and the expectations are so high, You get a little nervous and you're afraid to make mistakes. I mean, everybody's like that. You're human. You're afraid to make a mistake because the expectation is so high. So once he got past that of afraid to making a mistake and afraid to letting his team down and just play risk-free or just play, you know, play with a risk, then that's when his game turned around. And, you know, I watched him in 1999. I think he came into his own, and I'll never forget. This is when I knew that he was making the turn. Is when we were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. He got hurt 4 games before that, and Neil O'Donnell came in, and then we were playing the game, and Neil O'Donnell got hurt. He got his lip busted and, you know, concussion. He didn't know where he was, and Steve McNair trots in, you know, with not even warming up, just snapped his helmet. 2 plays later, it's 4th and 13. He throws it to a guy named Chris Sanders for 13 yards. Catch it, first down. Then the next couple of plays, he throws it to Aaron Kinney, and he catches the corner route for a touchdown. And I watched his body language when he jogged off the field. He was holding the ball in his hands. He knew that this is my moment, and that's why Steve McNair is so special.
Chris Sanders is with us, forever Titans wide receiver. You brought up something earlier, Chris, about, you know, having to sit for – Steve had to sit for a couple of years. And I look at quarterbacks today, and I know the money. There's so much money involved with first-round picks that it's hard to do that. But I do believe that – and I'll use the Titans as an example. If Mariota or Jake Locker – you know, Jake Locker sat for a year, but if they had that time like Steve had, their careers might look different. Do you feel that way with quarterbacks today?
I agree. I mean, I think the problem there with that a lot of quarterbacks fall into is when they're in college, they have success quick. And when you have that success quick and then you come into the NFL and you have to sit, that's a hard pill to swallow. But look at some of the great quarterbacks that had to sit for a couple of years and then they came into fruition. No, I'm naming a guy, Aaron Rodgers, Steve Young, guys that had to sit, learn the system, learn how to play the game, learn coverages, learn your players, learn the offense, learn so many things. And once they learned, then now their skill set can take over. Because a lot of guys come and say, well, I have a great skill set, I have a great arm, but then you struggle at first. And then you don't play with confidence. I mean, another guy that you look at Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning threw about 20-something, you know, interceptions early in his career because he had to learn on the run. But once he understood the game, once he understood coverages, once he understood how to lead a team, then that's when they can turn the corner. So I think it's a good thing that when young quarterbacks come in the league, sit for a while, learn from somebody in front of you, learn from somebody who's done that before, and so you can be where they're at. So I think the quarterback should sit as opposed to been thrown into the fire.
Look who just won the Super Bowl. What did he do his first year?
He sat.
Sat.
Exactly.
Never touched the field his first
Never.
Year.
But see, a lot of we as football players, we think it's you're a failure if you sit for a year. And I don't think, I mean, I came in as a league as a wide receiver, and I had success right off the bat. I made the all-rookie team and all those things. But once I started getting double coverage, and once I had to understand how to run routes, I struggled a little bit because I just got thrown in the fire, and my skill set was good at first. But then once I had to understand, I had to understand the game. And once I understood the game, then now my skill set could take over. And that's exactly what these quarterbacks need.
Chris, one thing that we've been talking about, but I've brought it up, is with Corey Davis, it clearly hasn't worked as the fifth overall pick. And, you know, he's been solid. He's had, you know, some flashes here and there. But, you know, we've also discussed the Titans potentially drafting his replacement this season. What would be your advice to him as you hear all that and you hear the critics of, you got to go out there and make it happen? What would be your advice to Corey Davis?
You know what? If I was sitting next to Corey Davis right now, I would tell him, hey, you know, you just got to keep turning. You got to keep fighting. And I know that sounds cliche-ish or corny, but whatever, if you're with the Tennessee Titans or you're with another team, you got to play so well that the team has to play you. And I'm going to give you an illustration. You know, I think it was 1998, they drafted Kevin Dyson and they brought Yancey Thigpen in, and now I'm sitting here like, you know, woe is me. I mean, I made an all-rookie team and you're bringing two other guys in, and this is what helped me, because I was getting really mad and I was upset at the whole organization. And one of my friends sat me down and he said this: you got two choices, to get better or get bitter. So instead of me getting bitter and getting mad at the organization and getting mad at them not throwing me the ball or getting mad at everybody else, I chose to get better. I sat down, I looked at film and said, you know what? What do I need to do to get better as a player? How is my attitude? What's my body language looking like? Am I coachable? That's exactly what Corey Davis needs to do. Forget about being bitter. Forget about what everybody's saying. Forget about what the media's saying. Hey, let me turn on this film and say, how can I get better? And if he has that attitude of, where do I need to get better, he can be a dominant player in the league. Forget about what happened in the past. Today's a new day. Go in this organization, if it's with the Titans or any other team, and go and say, you know what, I don't have to prove anything. I'm going to show you that I'm one of the best receivers in this league.
They have the slot guy in Adam Humphries. They have A.J. Brown that becomes a running back as soon as the ball hits his hands.
Yeah.
Do you think this team needs a burner? Do they need to find that speed guy?
I think they have one. I think it's Raymond. Raymond has proved himself. I mean, look at the long balls that he caught. I think it was one against the Colts, and it was the one against Baltimore. I mean, he has the speed. I know he's not a tall guy to where he can jump up and catch the ball. But he's one of those guys that can stretch the field. I mean, if you look into the draft, you know, everybody's talking about that this is a deep class of wide receivers. Yeah, it is a deep class, but look how many speed guys you have. Look at Jerry Jeudy. He runs a 4.5. CeeDee Lamb. No. CeeDee Lamb runs a 4.5. Ruggs runs a 4.28. Jefferson runs a 4.45. You know, Michael Pittman, I think he runs like a 4.5. You have Jalen Rigger, who's from TSU, who's a pretty fast guy. Then you have another speed guy that's KJ Hamler from Penn State. Those are some of the speed guys. But if you look in the draft, there's not a lot of guys that are running 4.3 and 4.2, but it's a lot of guys that can play football. So if they can find a guy that's a burner, that can take the top off the defense, then I think the Tennessee Titans can be successful.
Hey, Coach Sanders.
Yes, sir.
I'm gonna get better, not bitter, at my routes.
Let's go.
I'm gonna get better.
I love that.
But a lot of work to do.
I've got time to work on it.
You would look gross in your uniform, though. I mean, for real.
Hey, his hair would look great under that helmet.
Yeah, I'm not wearing a helmet. I have no helmet. You gotta see the hair.
Oh, he's got a comb over?
It'll mess my hair up. I'm not putting the helmet on.
Hey, he's gelling. Remember, he's gelling.
Au naturel. Au naturel, Chris. By the way, do you remember how long your touchdown was? That first
from
touchdown?
The Raiders? The Raiders?
Uh-huh. Yep. We played it. Yep. How long was it?
Did you say 46 yards?
It was an explosive play. It was a long pass.
It was 46 yards.
48 yards.
Okay, I gave him all 48.
Nice.
48 yards. You know what wide receiver had three touchdowns in that game?
Uh, Oh, in that game?
Yep.
Tim Brown?
Tim Brown, yeah. Tim Brown in a losing cause. Tim Brown, three touchdowns. Yeah.
Wow.
I was wrong about Eddie. I said he had 200 yards rushing. He had 216 yards rushing.
He's a dog, man. That game was fun, but there was all Raider fans.
I know, unfortunately.
It was all Raider fans.
I was at the Liberty Bowl.
Yep.
It was odd. I felt like I was in my backyard playing football.
Do you remember who the quarterback was for the Raiders?
What was weird was there was nobody. There was a lot of Raider fans there, and the stadium was maybe half full. And then you guys in the next few weeks had games where there was no fans for either team there.
It was four people there, and they were cheering. Eddie, that's what they were doing.
Until you played the Steelers. Then they showed up again.
Hey, and the quarterback was Rich Gannon.
Nope.
For Oakland? Was it?
Yeah, for Oakland. Yeah, who was
number
it?
Number three.
Yep.
Guy with two first names. Oh, was it the guy from Napoleon Dynamite?
He rocked the mustache.
I don't know.
Jeff?
Jeff George.
Jeff George.
Golly.
Yep.
That's pretty good, man. That's old school right there.
That is old school.
That's awful. His face mask was awful. He looked like a linebacker with that face mask. It looked terrible.
Hey, we'll let you get back to Netflix.
Sure.
And the moles, okay? always good to talk to you. Yep, always good to talk to you. Be safe.
Appreciate you guys.
We'll talk soon.
Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Forever Titan Chris Sanders. We will come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Good stuff as always from Forever Titan Chris Sanders and our silly underdog picks champ. I failed to even do that in the introduction. He is our underdog champ. And it's always good to talk to him, so we appreciate him joining us. Looks like, guys, I don't know if you have seen this, the Predators have signed Alex Carrier to, what was it, a three-year deal?
Three-year deal, and it's a two-way contract. He's 23, and, you know, it's one of those things where you get drafted when you're 18. He's been around for a long, long time. He made his NHL debut, I want to say, when he was maybe only 20 or 21 years old, played a couple of games, and then has played a couple of games this season. I think they see him as a steady guy that, as, you know, the Dan Hamhuis, Yannick Weber crew, as they age out, there's an opportunity for Carrier to jump in there. I don't know that he's a top four guy, maybe, if he gets a chance, but I think he could be a solid 5, 6, 7 guy and no worse than that. I think they really like how he's developed, but he's more of a skilled defenseman. He also is a UC Saros lookalike, so if you ever need to have a stunt double for UC, you could use Alex.
Really?
If you look at him a certain way,
that.
They're about the same height. When they walk down the you know, from the bus to the plane or something like that into the arena, sometimes it is striking from certain angles, right? The more you see them, the more you tell them apart. When he first came up, and UC was still very young as well, I remember looking at them going, whoa, these guys look like brothers.
What about Pontus Aberg and Victor?
Oh, there was another one.
There were times I was like, I had to, like, you know, before I said anything, I had to check who I was talking to, because it was hard. It took a while to even really be able to figure. I mean, honestly, they really looked alike.
Definitely.
But that would probably be the one that would be the closest, right? Could you do any better than Pontus and Victor?
It depends on how far you are away and what angle you're shooting from. You know, if the further away from Aberg and Arvey, the easier it was to tell. But from certain angles, you're like, wow, that is close.
It was striking. For sure. Wanted to pass along that they have signed Alexander Carrier to a three-year deal. He's a defenseman. The contract is worth $700,000 in the NHL, $125,000 in the AHL, for 2021 season. It grows to 750 in the NHL and 175 the following year. And then same deal, well, actually 750 on the NHL, 200 if we're talking about that in 22-23. So wanted to pass that along. Also, this is a big day in the baseball world, right? Because yep. Everybody would be wearing the same number today in Major League Baseball. This would be 42 day.
I've been watching some games on MLB Network this morning. They're showing some old Jackie Robinson Day matchups. The Yankees were on earlier, got Cubs and Pirates on now. I'm not sure what year this one is. Looks fairly recent, but where they're all wearing the number 42, and obviously an important day in the history of not only baseball but sports.
I wonder if they could actually show a whole game. I don't know if I've ever watched a game from start to finish that Jackie Robinson played in, but that would be cool to do that. I wonder if, you know, by at least a World Series game. I know they were televising some of the games, but I don't know that they've ever done it like on MLB Network where they show games from start to finish. I wonder if that's on the docket today, but I would enjoy that. We've seen all
That'd
these great
cool.
clips of Jackie Robinson and some of these amazing plays that he makes. And I just happened to see the Ken Burns baseball episode that talks about him first breaking in mm-hmm. in 1947. I'll tell you, it's emotional when you think about all those things. You know Buck O'Neill? Remember Buck O'Neill, the tremendous voice from the Negro Leagues that I thought was one of the great characters that emerged from that Ken Burns documentary. Just a guy that you just loved hearing tell stories. Mm-hmm. He had such an amazing perspective on that time. And this is one thing that he talked about on that day when everybody was watching. He said, he tried to take both perspectives, right? He said from the players in the Negro Leagues, they were watching and it was so essential that Jackie Robinson did well, right? So they were all rooting for the Dodgers. And on the other side, he says, I could understand how some of the white players felt. He says, because we had played them, right, in a lot of barnstorming games. They would play each other in exhibition games during the off season. He said, so they knew that we could play, and they knew that more of us were coming if Jackie Robinson did well. And he said, I knew that as I looked in there, the perspective of some of them was going to be, he's taking one of our guys' spots, right? One of our guys isn't playing. So the tension, can you imagine what that was like in those first few weeks?
I try to soak up anything and everything I can when it comes to Jackie Robinson.
Mm-hmm. So awesome.
You know, it's we'll never, and I'll never know. And, you know, till you've walked in those shoes, and none of us ever in these times will ever walk in those shoes, and thank goodness for that. But to know what he dealt with, man, most are not equipped to do that, and he did. And it's mind-blowing what he had to, you know, endure. And I watched that stuff, and part of me just, you know, it's hard to watch, right? Like, you just think that...
Yeah, you get emotional, don't you?
Yeah,
I mean, it starts churning inside you when you watch it. And I've watched it many times before, but every time I have the same reaction.
So do I. I mean, and, you know, it's cool to see how they've honored his legacy some 70 years later and continue to do that. And, you know, whether it's a documentary like you're talking about or the movie 42, you know, I think it's been well done to see, you know, not only all the good stuff, but then everything, like you were saying, that he went through that, you know, and I remember, I guess it was in 42, and it may have been in the documentary also of, you know, when they said they were going to do this and bring him up, it was like, you do realize the things you're going to go through. And
right.
That you have to be strong enough, that the things you're going to hear and your family is going to have to deal with. I mean, you have to be strong, and it was going to take a special individual to go through that. And he clearly was it.
Yeah. I never can get enough of that stuff when it comes on. Also, Cal Ripken Jr. hit 3,000 today. I think it was 20 years ago. I believe that's right.
Oh, wow.
20 years ago, today was Cal Ripken's 3,000th hit. They were playing the Twins. Do you remember the pitcher?
Wow. What? So it was 20, what, how long ago?
I think it 20 was years ago? 2000, yeah.
I'm trying to think back.
I have no idea.
I pride myself in remembering some of the guys that gave up the 3,000th hit to certain guys, but it's not coming to mind. Do you have it in front of you?
I don't.
I just know it.
Oh, you know it. All right, give me the initials of the pitcher.
H.C.
Ugh, that doesn't help. H.C. for the Twins.
Yep.
Oh, man. All right, give me the first name. I'm drawing a blank.
If I tell you the first name, you're going to get it. How about I go H.E. for the first name? This is at the Metrodome in Minneapolis.
At the Metrodome.
20 years ago.
And the final initial is a C.
Yes. C-A. H-E and C-A.
So this is not some scrub. I mean, this is a guy that
well,
that we
no, it's I just know you. You'll get it if I tell you his first name is Hector.
Ah, I'd be guessing. Hector Contreras?
Nope. I can't believe I thought for sure you. I
man,
I'm
you
surprised.
You start getting into the, it becomes a the years start running together in the 2000s for me. I start struggling a little bit more.
Okay.
With stuff like that.
Hector Carrasco.
Hector Carrasco?
Yep.
Wow. I didn't think he was pitching that early. I didn't realize he goes back to 2000.
Yeah,
that's
he
good
was
stuff.
He was a journeyman, right? For the most part.
Oh, big time. Yeah, he pitched for the Reds for a while. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he bounced around. I think he had a couple stints with the Twins, if I'm not mistaken. But, pretty much just a journeyman. But, yeah, he gave up the 3,000 hit to Cal Ripken 20 years ago. Gosh, 20 years ago. Hard to believe. But historical day. This is a day that we always look forward to watching everybody wear number 42. We will talk to Chris Mason at 1 o'clock, our weekly chat. With him, we will come back with more of Darren, Donick, and Chase. On the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. A lot of you are working from home, just like us. During these times, and just so you know, you can stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app is an option. You can enable Alexa Skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can live stream from the website, thegamenashville.com. And we do appreciate all of you who have been doing that through all this. We certainly, certainly appreciate it. There's some news on the wrestling front. And with that being said, we go over to our WWE desk. Chase McCabe is standing by.
Yes. So WWE announced today Vince McMahon had a conference call with the executives in the company. And like everybody else, they're feeling it too. So they've released some on-air talent. There's some front office folks that are taking furloughs and executives that are taking pay cuts. All while the XFL, which is, you know, another company that he's a part of, they suspended operations and laid off employees. They've actually filed for bankruptcy. So that, you know, coming in the last few days. But I was also before the show reading that President Donald Trump announced on Tuesday that he's putting together an advisory group that will work to reopen the country economically. And that includes people from sports. Adam Silver is a part of it, Rob Manfred, Roger Goodell, Dana White, Vince McMahon, Lisa Kennedy from NASCAR, Don Garber from the MLS, and then Gary Bettman, involving a lot of different people. I've seen Bob Kraft on the list, Jerry Jones, Mark Cuban. So he's trying to put together this advisory group to help get things going again from an economic standpoint. And, you know, I've brought this up on the show with Vince McMahon that he and Donald Trump are very good friends. So no surprise that he is a part of this, and his company, you know, they've kept things going during all of this from their own facilities. So I find that interesting, but also making cuts today.
Who are these? Are these big names or just kind of C-level?
I would say C-level names. Some names that kind of, you know, that you might recognize would be Carl Anderson, who's been a part of a pretty big group with AJ Styles as of recently. AJ Styles had a match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania, and so Carl Anderson was a part of that. So he was released, but everybody else is pretty much considered C-level. If you watch religiously, you know who they are, but names like, yeah, they wouldn't stand out. And I think more are coming. You know, I think there will definitely be some more. They usually do some releases after WrestleMania. That's when contracts usually run up. But with all of with everything going on, it's not surprising that there are more.
The XFL filing bankruptcy. You know, the big thing about the XFL is we were told, you know, deep pockets, right? Oh, this one's going to last because it's got deep pockets, and this time it's going to work, and they've got the TV contracts. Is this going to put an end to all these startup football leagues? Because they've all come and gone so quickly in a blink of an eye. You go to the bathroom, you come out, and this league is folded. Is this going to put an end to these startup football leagues?
Unfortunately, I think it will, and the sad part is that I don't know how you guys feel, but I felt like the XFL was going to make it, at least for another season. It was going to get farther than the others have in recent years. It was going to get further than the first time around for the XFL. They were bringing in some TV ratings. People were paying attention to it. You know, some of these guys are now getting jobs in the NFL, which was the idea behind it. So I really thought it was going to make it, and then all of this happened, and just it shut it down abruptly. So, to answer your question, I think it's done. I just think that they need to stop and realize that until the NFL wants to back a league and say we're going to make this a development league, then it's not going to work.
I was thinking the same thing. I think you have to have a partnership and a developmental angle to it, and if you did, I think you could definitely have a good springtime league that people would watch for a short window. You know, not a full huge 16 game season, but a short window in the right couple of months. I think you could have a nice flow, but I don't think you should start in February. I don't think you should start right after the Super Bowl. I think you take a little break, maybe after the draft. You have in the right cities where the weather's correct and you had the right kind of fan base, smaller venues. I think you could get people to watch. I think you could. But, you know, trying to have a big, you know, thing like I don't think the XFL was going to make it.
I don't know even
without this.
I'm not sure the time. I would probably, if I were doing it, I'd probably say May, June, July would be the 3 months that I would probably focus in on. May, June,
July. I don't
know
if I'd go 3 months. I think I'd go 2 months.
Would the players that know they have a chance of at least getting a training camp invite, would they want to do that so close to the NFL opening camps?
Well, that's
why you'd have to keep the season short, so you wouldn't have too much wear and tear on those guys.
Then maybe end of April, May and June, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, that could work. Instead of just right after the Super Bowl?
I don't think it matters anymore because I think these leagues are done. We won't be talking about one for a long time. I just think they're dead.
The only way we will is if the NFL announces, "Hey, we are partnering with Vince McMahon to do the XFL, but it's going to be our development league." Like all 32 teams will be affiliated with the 8 or 10 teams or whatever, and it'll be a proving ground or something like that. It'll be the minor leagues for the NFL. That's the only way I see it having any chance of working. And we all saw what happened with NFL Europe. I mean, it eventually folded. But I think I just think that's the only way it happens.
If that was going to happen, wouldn't that have already happened?
You would think.
I mean, they did NFL Europe, and then it eventually went away. So
and it worked for a while.
I thought that I thought they had the right idea with NFL Europe. I don't know if
then why
if
did
they
it go away?
Teams or what?
Why did it go? I don't know. Why did it go away?
I guess Tim
Hasselbeck would be the right guy to ask that question. He's had some really nice things to say about that league. I think that could have served its purpose. I'd have to go back and look at what happened with that. I know didn't it have some developmental angle to it?
Yeah, I mean there were a few guys and you know that played in NFL Europe. That
Tommy Maddox.
Yeah, Tommy Maddox. Well, he played in the XFL too. But
were teams putting guys on their roster, teams that they had the rights to, were they putting them on NFL Europe rosters? I think they were, weren't they?
That I don't know. I don't remember that.
I don't remember
it
either.
Was what, the early 2000s when it folded? Again,
it's
only
been,
if
has it been
it
that long since NFL Europe went bye-bye?
I mean, it was NFL Europe, so you know that there was...
2007.
You know, the NFL was in charge
of it. I didn't think it was. I was going
to
say about
1991
a decade.
To 2007. That's a long time.
So I wonder what was the what made it finally come to an end. I mean, that's you're right. That's gosh, 16 years.
Yeah, I think. But that was also around the time that Goodell took over, and they were playing actual NFL games. Over there, I don't remember when the first, but I feel like 2006, 2007 is when all that started. So that, you know,
So the players were assigned by NFL teams. I'm looking at the history of it here. They wanted the younger developmental players to get additional game experience. So it was a six-team league for a long time. They started off with 10, got it down to 6, which is about right.
So here's a quote.
I do think it could work.
NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell thanked the fans for their support, but said that it was time to develop a new international strategy, terming the move to fold NFL Europa as the best business decision. The league was reportedly losing about $30 million per season. Hmm. And that's, of course, when they started playing games. You know,
I wonder if this push now for London, I wonder if that would change that mentality with this, you know, now this big presence in London every year from the league.
I don't know.
Because
that's a good question.
In 2007, it wasn't like that. But I mean, every year, it just seems like every other week, you know, I feel like last season, it was like every other week they were playing a game in London, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just it keeps, mm-hmm. they just keep adding and adding and adding. And so it's very clear that is a direction that they're headed and eventually want to land. So would that maybe help things? I think, by the way, when I was just quickly looking at it, I think there were only two countries that actually had a team from start to finish. Actually, maybe only one. No. Maybe one country. Was Germany the only country that was from start to finish all 16 years?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's because it was... Yeah. Yeah, Germany.
They were the only from start to finish. I don't know. Next time we have Tim on, maybe if we have Tim next week, we can ask him about that. Like, why? Because I just think now with this news, I think all that stuff is done.
They're playing four games in London next year, or they're scheduled to. At you know, because they have the Tottenham
Hotspur.
Fourth
of their season, they're spending in London.
Yeah, two games at Wembley. And then two games at Tottenham Hotspur.
Hmm. Speaking of the NFL, Adam Schefter just tweeting out in the last 5-10 minutes, a member of the Chargers organization has tested positive for COVID-19, and two others have shown symptoms, sources are telling him. Owner Dean Spanos and general manager Tom Telesco and head coach Anthony Lynn were not amongst the group testing positive or showing symptoms.
Hmm. That's concerning.
It's still scary, you know, when you have the ability to have it without showing symptoms. That's what we've got to figure out. That's why this next wave of testing that I've been reading about, watching, And I told you about the article where Major League Baseball players are going to be involved in one of the things doing. And I know a number of states are doing this as well, just trying to test the general public to try to get a feel of, you know, what are the percentages of people that are sitting around going, hey, I feel fine. And right. they find out, hey, you already had it. You actually had it before. Or you have it right now. You have no symptoms, but your blood test is showing that you have it.
Yeah, because we see those numbers that they release of, you know, positive cases in the state of Tennessee. And, you know, I sat there last night and was going, yeah, but that, I mean, that number is higher because of untested people. I mean, there's, you know, there are people that either have it right now and don't know they have it yet, or they thought they had the flu, you know, earlier in the fall, and it turns out this is what it was. So I'm
curious. Or maybe even like January or February, you thought you had the flu, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would be curious of what those numbers look like of, you know, what's accurate? You know, how different are the numbers?
That's a big part of the equation they're working on right now, and hopefully they can get it as soon as possible.
Does this story have any bearing whatsoever on a draft that's just around the corner in just over a week?
That's a very good question.
So.
I don't know. You say no?
I don't think so. I don't think they're going to cancel the draft, right? Unless there's a huge wave of these things. How would it affect it in your mind? I mean, if you're continuing to have the logistical, everybody's in their home, you make the selections, etc.
Is literally everybody in the home, like no one is going
to
be gathered?
That's what
in
you're
the
supposed
to.
You're not supposed to gather. You're not
the
supposed
facilities
to gather
are
at
closed.
All.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying nobody's going to be together in the same room.
And according
nobody,
according to the league,
not supposed to be. Yeah.
But I do wonder if there's going to be a team that tries to sneak by that they have. You know, the GM has a couple of scouts over. Oh, they just happened to stop by.
Well, think about it. I mean, they just started. I mean, they've been together. So, I mean, they finally have had everybody, you know, shut down facilities. So what does this mean for in the case of the Chargers? What if they've been having gatherings? You know, they have been having gatherings. So
right.
What does that mean? I wonder if they're, you know, pay close attention. Does this mean something is about to happen on the Chargers' end where this is going to rifle through their organization? I don't know.
Yeah, and that's one thing that's always worried me is, you know, a couple of positive tests come out of an organization and then all of a sudden it runs through, and that, you know, what does that do as we get closer to...
Well, that means they haven't been abiding by the guidelines if that's happening. Yeah. At least that's what you would think. I mean, just like Dak Prescott, like, you know, what is he thinking? I thought everybody was on the same page. You're supposed to be... quarantined, you're supposed to be using the distancing, and that should go for every team and their scouting, right? If it runs through your entire scouting group, you know that group has probably been together.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, we will come back and start the fourth and final hour with Chris Mason, our weekly chat with him. That is on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.